Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
No, but slow play is bad.
Yeah, it drives people nuts.
Slow play is bad. You know, if I owned the golf course and there was slow play, I would walk out with a checkbook and I would say, how much money did you pay to be initiated into this golf club? I'm writing you a check. Get off this course and never, ever walk here again.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And if you think that is harsh, if you think I'm the only one who would do something like that, we have this email from our friend Jeff Pickett, who says, your check writing solution to slow play made me think of Bob Parsons of PXG fame. PXGs are those clubs.
We only sell them ourselves. They're the best clubs.
You know, PXG clubs. A lot of pros use PXG clubs. Legend has it that at Scottsdale National Golf Club, which is owned by Parsons, of which Wilbon is a member, it is owned 100% by Bob Parsons.
We have to play that short par three course.
Yeah. There is a policy by which one member is voted out every year.
Ooh,
presumably, this could be for slow play or other boorish behavior. Here's the kicker. The voting includes club members and staff. Would love to see this standard applied at other 1%er hangouts. Also, it begs the question, if this were the standard of Columbia, how would you fare? I think I'd stay because I play fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I play fast and I'm chatty. And I don't throw clubs. I'm not, you know, I don't have any disciplinary problems. I don't get drunk, you know, on the course. You know, I'm pretty good, right? I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
Played 18 yesterday,
by the way. I love that you assume everyone plays at a private club. What'd you pay for your initiation? Here's the check.
Oh, well, no. I mean, well, I would do it at a public course.
Yeah.
How much for the day round? Here's right. The money. And here's an extra 10. Get out. Slow play. Get out.
Two prices. Play under 345, you get a discount.
You know.
Play over.
Oh, sure.
That'd be fine. That'd be fine. So, I played yesterday. I was so fortunate yesterday. It has been raining in Washington. Not heavy rain, but significant rain and significant drizzle. Covering, I don't know, 16 or 18 of the 24 hours of the day in the last 3 or 4 days, right? Fair to say?
Like a heaviness hangs in the air.
Yeah.
But to be fair, through the first 4 months of the year, we were in a pretty significant drought.
So I'm okay with it, but I never thought they would let carts out of Columbia yesterday. And I got the email in the morning, course conditions, said no restrictions. I didn't trust it. I called the course, called the pro shop. They said, better get over here in a hurry. No, because you never know when they're going to lift it and put the restrictions back on. And I got to play all 18 yesterday. We played in 2 hours and 53 minutes, 18 holes, 4 guys in carts. And it was lovely. And when I was coming, 15 is a blind tee shot. It's an up tee shot. You get to the crest of a ridge. I can't hit it over the ridge. Can't even hit it to the top of the ridge anymore. And then you have a shot facing down, you know, into a green, into like a bowl green. And who do I see as I come up? I've just hit my second shot, which I thought was a really good
shot.
Thought
it was going to bounce up.
Yeah, I thought it was going to get on the green. I liked it a lot. Hit a 5 rescue. Who do I see but my son in the sand trap area practicing?
Yeah, practicing. Dad's wearing his full beanie. It warmed up by that time, but you are cold on the golf course. And he gave me the full Forrest Gump wave.
You know, so I was so happy to see him.
That's great.
It made me so happy. And it was a wonderful morning. It was a totally unexpected morning. We have something to play for you. We got this from Rich Johnson, who writes, I'm not sure exactly what the crowd was chanting about two-thirds of the way through the second quarter of the Seattle-DC XFL playoff game. Was that in D.C. by any chance?
Yeah, but it was.
Okay, because D.C. plays in Audi Field, a 20,000-seat stadium that usually hosts the soccer sells it out. They apparently do very well. I guess the D.C. franchise, I don't know anything about it, the D.C. franchise has done very, very well. Here's what play-by-play announcer Tom Hart said.
And the crowd engaged in a hearty La Chiserie to the folks from Seattle.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
What? Well, nobody was saying La Chiserie. He just said that. And we find it, and we, of course, highlight it.
Yes.
So that's the disappointment in my life that I went on the PTI show the other day and praised Maureen Dowd, and she hasn't contacted me. Anyway, come on. Come on. What are you talking about? Praise Kerry Russell yesterday. Fully expecting a contact. Fully expecting a contact. But Tom Hart.
Yeah, that's that's great.
Play it again. This is so great.
And the crowd engaged in a hearty La Chiserie to the folks from Seattle.
Just wonderful.
Well, the DC has history with Seattle and football playoff games.
That's true.
We're usually on the losing end of that. But yeah. No, this hearing that and just seeing the amount of people who are going to that, what I would call a boutique inside the city stadium, it's a reminder of everything that we've lost as soon as they moved out to FedEx Field.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's right next to National Stadium. Not right next to.
Right, but you also have, you now have an influx of young professionals who have the disposable income who can go to a game like that as an afternoon activity.
So we think it's about $20, $25 to go to a game like that?
I bet if you're all in to get into this into the arena and have a couple of beers with your friends, you're probably looking at $75.
But it's all the seats are good because it's only 20,000.
Yeah, yeah, it's a nice cozy stadium.
Let me tell you something that happened to me yesterday. Tracy sent me an email from a website called Awful Announcing. And I've seen Awful Announcing before. I'm sure they've ripped me a number of times.
Those are the Monday night years.
You know, yeah, they just killed me. So they say in it that Comcast has dropped the NFL Network and the Red Zone. They've dropped the Red Zone. So, I mean, I think you people know me well enough to know that I don't know how to do streaming. I don't know how to cut the cord. I don't know how to pick a la carte things that I want on television. I have no idea how to do these things. I'm an old man, and I'm used to cable. And I pay far more for cable every month than I should. I pay like $260, $270 for cable, whereas I'm quite confident that if I streamed and only got what I wanted, it wouldn't be anywhere near that much money.
But it's impossible to get only what you want. Streaming is now the new cable where you have to buy up into all these... you know, these upgrade packages.
So it would still be $260 or $270?
When you start adding up all the secondary streaming services and then what's on top of those, and it's like cable where you can't get away with it. Like, you need to have local sports, and you need to have, to this point, you needed Red Zone.
I need the Red Zone. The Red Zone is the most important sports channel in the United States of America. If other sports could do that, they would do that. The great advantage for football is almost all the games are played at the same day, you know, and people make appointment to see them, and you can do it because they're structured 6 or 7 games in the early window, 4 or 5 games in a late window, and then you bleed into the Sunday night. It's a brilliant concept. You're going to cancel that. Who's running Comcast? Ari Melber? Somebody doesn't know anything about sports whatsoever. You can't. Now, this panicked me yesterday.
I think you're sort of missing the larger issue here, which is the NFL Sunday Ticket was sort of up for grabs, and YouTube made a big play for it. So now this is going to be exclusive to YouTube TV. So that's going to drive all the people to YouTube. And it's actually, it would be easier to maintain whatever few streaming services you want, or like a basic cable package. You just wish you could look at that and be like, well, add my regional baseball and give me access to a couple of national games, bundle that with the YouTube TV, and that's easier to know exactly where you're going.
I've never seen YouTube TV. I don't know what it is.
You haven't been to Chan's house.
I don't have, like, there's not a channel on my clicker that says YouTube, so I don't know how to do that. Yeah. I just want the Red Zone at number 861 on Comcast, and when Tracy sent me this, I went insane.
Yeah.
I said, I will drop Comcast today. I will buy whatever cable system picks up the NFL Network Red Zone, you know, with Scott Hansen. I will do that. McManus got on and said, I think this may be false reporting. That may only apply to the satellite one that Andrew Siciliano does, which I don't get. And then later in the day, Tracy sent me another link, which purported that Roger Goodell called up, I believe the name of the guy who owns Comcast is Brian Golden, if you could look that up. I think that may be his name. It's Brian Gordon, Brian Roberts. Is Brian Roberts, maybe? Does that sound right? Owns Comcast, Brian Roberts?
Brian Roberts was the golf announcer.
And the baseball player, manager. Yeah, that's the Brian Roberts I remember. Owner of Comcast.
Owner of Comcast. So this was another story on Awful Announcing that Roger Goodell.
Brian Roberts,
yeah. Thank you very much. That they had a phone conversation and now it's back. And now it's back.
Nice.
I don't believe any of this at the moment. And I'm stating that as fine a relationship as I've had with Comcast over X amount of years, if they drop the Red Zone, we kick them to the curb and we find the next thing that puts the Red Zone back
on. Good luck trying to cancel Comcast.
What do you mean?
It'll take forever. You sure we can't offer you this new deal? That's like the whole strategy.
The Red Zone. Deal with the Red Zone. That's the one I want.
Yes, the Red Zone. You offer me the Red Zone where I can press three numbers and get it,
yeah,
and I'll stay with you.
It'd be like driving.
Is it time for me to get streaming? Are you saying it's as expensive as everything else?
Look, you can break it down. I'd say for you, what you would probably end up doing is just using getting the HD dog ears that you attach to the back of your TV. You get over-the-air HD local channels, and then you can try and find the packages that you need. Like everything with cable, this is why you're able to make a career on TV. People are paying for stuff they don't watch and never want to watch.
You just don't want to watch me.
Scrolling.
No, I understand.
I will say for YouTube TV.
You understand
TV,
this. You're born into this world. I am not of this world. I'm
of the
alien
very
in this
narrow
world.
Window where I was born pre-internet and then sort of have grown up in the internet era.
Right. So you understand these
but
things.
But I prefer if you just give me a clicker and just say, let me go to 861 or I want to turn on the baseball game and I memorized where it is rather than having to log in or remember passcodes to various streaming services.
I assume that because of Don Ohlmeyer, the answer to all your questions is money. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to figure out why would you drop the Red Zone?
Doesn't make
the
any
Red
sense.
Zone. Everybody watches the Red Zone on yeah. Sunday. They even if they watch their own team and they are loyal to their own team, they are going back and forth to Red Zone, right?
Yeah, I just think how much has the Red Zone changed? I mean, how long have you been watching Red Zone? About 10 years?
As long as it's been on.
So think about how long deals might have been in place where right. people are double dipping into various access of the Red Zone. So if something is up for grabs and I buy it, I want to make sure someone else is not able to use it as well.
And that's a lovely global view. And my view is more particular.
861.
It is 861. I want to press it.
Well,
I want to press it 1 minute before it starts so I can hear the music.
Yes. It's all about the music.
I can get the Octobox. I want to do that. That's what I want to do. The Red Zone. One other question. Who is Lisa Kerney?
Lisa Kerney.
K-E-R-N-E-Y. She's on these FanDuel commercials.
Okay.
She does the thing where she interviews the people. You know, it's a setup thing. So-and-so just won in the third inning. And she asks him a couple of questions. Is she an actress? Is she a sports person?
Sports person.
Yeah. She seems familiar to me, and
she
I don't know
at ESPN.
From when.
Yeah.
She did work at ESPN?
Yep. Until 2018, it says, yes.
I don't know her. I've never met her. But she looked familiar to me. Okay, well, now she's doing those commercials. And they put her name up. When they put someone's name up, you think, well, I should know who this is. All yes. right, we'll get out of here. Chuck Culpepper, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
It's always good when Michael Granberry sends an artist for us to listen to. And he writes, in my ongoing quest to introduce you to the country's best indie songwriters, I'm thrilled to bring you the music of Heather Aubrey Lloyd, who makes her home close to your own backyard. Born in Baltimore, Heather calls herself a recovering journalist. She once worked as a reporter for the Baltimore Sun, but left 20 years ago to pursue a career in music. University of Maryland alumni, has spent the last two decades playing what she calls bait shops, biker weeds, and clothing optional resorts all over this great land. Now she's a welcome fixture on YouTube. She describes her musical influences as a mixture of Janis Joplin and Joni Mitchell, with a voice as full and passionate as it is vulnerable. The combination of that voice and Heather's writing place her in the pantheon of female singers proud to have made Baltimore their home. It is, of course, quite a list, extending to Billie Holiday, Tori Amos, Toni Braxton, and Cass Elliott. And I didn't know all that. This is a song called Even Now. And you know, as Jackson Brown says, but that girl can sing. You know, that girl can sing. She plays in Chuck Culpepper. Chuck wrote a great story the other day about visiting the resting place of the late great Secretariat and how many people visit the resting place of the late great Secretariat and how many people in charge of that were born after Secretariat passed. It was a great story on the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's Triple Crown. And before I ask you a question, I'll just reminisce a little bit. In 1973, Secretariat, I believe Ron Turcotte was the jockey, won the first two legs of the Triple Crown by defeating a horse called Sham. Sham, I believe, finished second in the Derby and second in the Preakness. And then in the Belmont, Secretariat ran out, won it by 31 lengths, the greatest triumph in the history of big-time horse racing, and broke Sham's heart. This broke Sham's heart. I mean, Sham, you know, horses know who's beating them. You know, horses can't add 12 and 15, but horses know who's beating them, right? Broke Sham's heart. The biggest regret in my entire career in journalism, my entire career. I was at Newsday at the time, and Newsday sports editor was Stan Isaacs, who I dearly loved, and he put together a team of 10 or 12 people that were going to cover every inch of that Belmont Stakes in anticipation of this Triple Crown. And I wasn't on the team. There was no story for me. I didn't get to go to the Belmont. I didn't get to do anything having to do with it. So I sat home and I watched it. And I will tell you, as I've told people forever and ever, it's the single greatest thing I've ever seen in television. And it's just so great. I mean, the horse goes out and kills it. So I bored you. Chuck probably left. He probably wasn't even on the line. But I thought you'd like to hear that story, you know? Because, I mean, I'm one of those people that has that fondness for Secretariat, and you ran into those sorts of people, right?
I did, and I had a lot of questions for you about that, like how you spent that evening, the morning or whatever, that you hadn't been there. I kind of expected you to say that you were there. We're both
I wanted to be there.
Alums.
Yeah.
We were both, yeah.
I wanted to be there. I wasn't. Yeah. I didn't make the cut. And so I watched it on TV and spent my whole day waiting for it. Because I don't think there's ever been, well, certainly in my lifetime, as great a sense of anticipation for a race as for that. When was that the first Triple Crown in X amount of years, right?
25 at that time. And
yeah.
That's always forgotten because then we went from, 78 to 15, which was longer, of course. 37 without one.
Yeah, but there were three in a very small period of time.
Yes.
So
yes.
And so, I mean, I really, and in those days, horse racing and boxing were really major sports. And if you could cover horse racing and boxing, that was a way of saying to your friends, I'm good. I've made it. And I didn't make the cut. I did not. So anyway.
Well, you were awfully young.
Yeah, but other guys at Newsday were my age. No, I didn't make the cut. It's okay. So, but I want to ask this. How do you explain, and you've seen it firsthand, the worship of the horse? Was it his looks? Was it his owner? Was it the romance of that period of time? How do you explain? You've had to grapple with this.
So I do find it really curious is how it's held on so strongly for 50 years. The movie helped to some degree, I think, especially for people who were not born at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the foremost matter in this is how it looked and how human memory works and how that just the sheer power of it registered somehow in the human consciousness, even if you go and watch it on YouTube or wherever. And I think that's the thing that is held, and it's that one race. And by the way, if you go look at the Preakness that year, there he makes a move in there that's just absolutely just captivating.
Didn't he set records in every horse race? Didn't he set the record?
He holds them still.
Yeah.
In all three. And that's another, you know, how in the world have none of those fallen in all this time? So that's another thing that makes it, you know, makes it hang on the way that it does, this fascination. And then I often wonder about the name as well. I think the name, I can never figure out if the horse made the name so powerful or the name itself is so powerful, but it's a great name. And it's a name that kind of rings in the head. And I think by now, of course, it's a name that if anyone says it, it just means greatness. So, but I think above all the factors, owner certainly included.
Penny Tweedy, yeah.
Yeah, and people still put pennies on the grave for her on top of the gravestone.
That was a lovely part of the piece. They dropped because it was Penny Tweedy who later remarried and had a different name when she passed. But they put pennies on the gravesite.
It's, yeah. So there's a lot to it, but I think that look of how that looked. I used to have a T-shirt, and I bought two of them because I knew one would wear out, of course. But of Turcotte looking back down, he arches his neck and looks back down the stretch.
He's 31 lengths ahead, and
he can barely even see anybody else.
Yeah, I can't stress this enough. These are the best horses, the best 3-year-old horses in America. There's no mutts in this thing. These are really good horses. And this is the classic distance. This is the mile and a half Belmont. If it was foggy, Turcotte couldn't see any other horse. It's triumphant beyond words. I mean, 50 years later, I can totally recall it. I've never seen a sporting event like you could say, okay, Greg Norman choked in the playoff in the Masters. But this is a triumph the likes of which I don't know that we've ever seen. This would be like the Yankees playing a Little League team, in effect. I mean, it's unbelievable, right, Chuck? It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. It's that one thing, I think, that holds this fascination alive the most. And, you know, the great Tom Callahan once wrote a column in the Washington Post, I believe in 1993 on the 20-year mark, where he referred to Jack Nicklaus watching that on TV and just being, you know, sort of fading down out of his seat onto the floor at the whole perfection of it. Because here's someone who had really pursued perfection in his life, and now he was seeing it.
So, I mean, I don't know that I said this, but if I were writing the movie and I was sitting in my living room watching this, I'd be on the phone saying, are you looking at this? Are you looking at this? Because he draws further and further away, and it's a beautiful horse. Secretariat was a big, big, beautiful horse, and it was with each stride, he drew further away. It was amazing, right?
Right, and Jamie Coram, the woman who's painted a mural of him in Paris, Kentucky, and it's painted the bottle of Woodford Reserve where he's on the front of the honorary bottle. She thinks that his composition and how he looked is part of it too. You know, he's beautiful when he runs. He's beautiful, and then and when he draws so far away from the others, and also, think about that race. You're not supposed to move as quickly as he did in that race. You're supposed to hang on more.
Long race.
Defend yourself. Yeah. And just move quickly. Didn't care. You know, was a machine.
Totally run into daylight. I mean, oblivious of everything else around. Look, I mean, here's what I did. When ESPN, I'm old, so I had something to do with this. There was a wonderful series right around the turn of the century, a little bit before that, called Sports Century, looking back at the 1900s in sports. And it was orchestrated fully by Mark Shapiro, who filmed everybody and had all the comments and asked a bunch of people, and I was one of them. I made the cut on this, and this is before I worked at ESPN, to list the 50 greatest athletes of the 20th century. And Wilbon never lets me forget this, and I don't want to forget it. I had Secretariat eighth. It's a horse, three races. That's all. And I would have put Secretariat second if I had any nerve. I mean, I felt you had to put Babe Ruth first because of what Babe Ruth did for sports. I mean, I felt the top three had to be Babe Ruth and Michael Jordan and Muhammad Ali. I mean, most people would sort of agree with that. There are other people in there. But I had Secretariat eighth. And Wilbon would say, how can you do that? It's a horsey. And I go, because the triumphs were so amazing and so consistent. And it's, you know, three races, right, Chuck, in 5 weeks. I mean, it tests you. It breaks horses, doesn't it?
Right, right. And again, that 25-year drought at the time with Citation in 1948, that was a big conversation point in the whole country at that point, you know, that everyone was kind of starved to see it again. And here is his thing that's so hard to do. And here's this thing that was done with such, like, dispatch.
You don't think it's dopey or ludicrous that people, you know, still, I don't know that they mourn the horse, but that they want to go see the grave? You don't think that's crazy, do you?
I don't think it's crazy. It tells us something about people, I think. Something that reaches into people maybe in a way that we can't even explain. And so I'm fascinated by it in that regard, how there are people who, now that, of course, the internet has come along since Secretariat died, and people who meet each other because they've been online talking about Secretariat, you know, people from different parts of the country, and who retain this fascination for him and collect art of him. I just find it, I think it's charming. Yeah.
The late, great Bill Knack wrote a million stories about Secretariat. A million.
Loved him.
I mean, he was the chronicler of horse racing in a different way than Andy Beyer, a much different way. And Knack was great about this. Are you staying? Are you going to be at the race? Are you going to be in Lexington for the race?
Yes, I'll be here. I'll be at the race, yes.
So our friend, Mr. Mallet, who paints for us, is touting this Japanese horse. Do you know anything about the Japanese horse?
Well, it's fascinating because the horses who win that UAE Derby in Dubai and that great cruise ship of a track that they have there called Maiden, those horses do not tend to fare well.
They don't win
in the Derby.
Nope.
They haven't. I believe it's 0-for-18 in just hitting the board.
Oh, so, okay.
So
win place,
that's why, you know, you figure somebody has to break that at some point. And there are a lot of people who really know the game, who really like this horse in this case. But I think this is one of those deals, and until it's done, you're just going to have to write it off.
I agree with that. So when I started covering the Derby, it was like the 1980s, mid-1980s, early mid-1980s. And you would go to Lexington and everybody stayed. What was the hotel? The Galt or something like
the
that?
The Galt House, right.
Galt the House. Galt House. And that was the number one hotel that everybody stayed at. And in those days, now I'm going back 40 years. In those days, you know, you could get a room at a hotel for between $85 and $125. And I wrote a column once about how I always wanted to know what it was like to stay in a $300 a night hotel room, because that was really a lot of money in those days. And I said, I found out because overnight, the Galt upped my rate to $325 for the exact same room because the Derby people were coming in. I said, they changed the menu a little bit, but now I was staying in a $325 a night room. I felt great about that. Is that hotel still exist? Do you stay there?
I haven't stayed there. I haven't stayed there since the Derby in the 90s. So,
right.
But it, you know, people in, I used to live in Kentucky for 9 years. People in Kentucky all over the state used to, you know, if your team made the basketball Sweet 16 high school, you know, big event, and it was in Louisville, you wanted to stay there. You know, it was a dream of many.
Well, I got it easy. I just stayed there, and then all of a sudden they jacked up the rates the next day. Is Baffert still banned from the Derby? Is he in or out?
Yes, he is still banned.
Wow.
I believe this will be the last banned occasion, and then next year is the 150th Derby, and I believe he can be back then. But I double-checked that.
Of course, we're going to have Andy on the show tomorrow because we can't have the Derby without Andy Beyer. But do you have a horse that you're touting in this one, Chuck?
I love this horse, Practical Move, and the real hard boots don't really. They've sort of gone off and since his win in the Santa Anita Derby, which was he had a cavalry in behind him in the stretch, and he held them all off. But I fall in love with stories, and I just love, he has these two owners from Albuquerque who, a married couple in their 60s, and the wife and the couple, Leslie, used to train. And we went to interview her yesterday, and she trained horses as a woman in the 80s in Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. And I said, how did you get them to accept you? And she said, I just kicked their asses. So I'm really into that one.
Well, your stuff is just a joy to read. And I'm sorry to have monopolized this conversation with my own shabby little life, but I felt it would be fun. So,
well, I just need to say that I worked at Newsday. I loved it. And Stan Isaacs is lovable, but that was a staffing error.
Yeah, that's how I say it. Thanks,
yeah.
Chuck.
Yeah.
Talk to you
Thank
soon.
Thank you so much, Tony. Okay.
Chuck Culpepper, he's a great writer, and he's lived everywhere. He's lived everywhere. We'll be back with Richard Justice. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is once again Heather Aubrey Lloyd. And Michael Granberry writes, since becoming a full-time musician, Heather has racked up a slew of awards, which include Album of the Year from the Songwriters Association of Washington and the Emerging Artist Honor bestowed by the National Women's Music Fest. She journeyed all the way to the Rocky Mountains to capture the top four Telluride Troubadour Award. Plus, she was named the 2019 Grand Prize winner of the prestigious Bernard Ebb Songwriting Award. I wonder if that's Kander and Ebb, who wrote musicals. She gives her approval to play what I think are her two best ballads, I Don't Know What I Want and Even Now. This is I Don't Know What I Want. This is Heather Aubrey Lloyd. And Michael, if people like Heather Aubrey Lloyd want their music played on this show, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And our great thanks to Michael Granberry, as always. Richard Justice is with us. You went on a trip. How was your trip?
It was wonderful. CBS Sunday Morning, I don't know if you watched that show a couple of years ago, they did a piece on Elizabeth and Sophie Mincili. Who do food tours. And we took a food tour to Puglia. Stanley Tucci did one of his Searching for Italy segments. So 4 days in Rome and about 5 days in Puglia. And holy smoke, did we eat.
Was there any type of food or any certain dish where you said, this is the best thing I've ever had in my life?
Yeah, there was one dish called, I think it's called Asami. It's peculiar to a restaurant in Rome. And basically you take olive oil in a skillet, put some dried chilies in, and then put dry spaghetti on top of it. Cook it that way, add some marinara. It's crunchy, it's peppery. Sophie highly recommended we all try. It was a little group, 10 people on the tour in Puglia. We had Rome to ourselves. We had our own tour guide in Rome. And it's, you know, I guess it's one of those things everybody should do once in their life, but they took us out in the country to Matera and Monopoly and all these places, and it was the Mincili women know what they're doing.
At any point at any of these dinners, did the Pope drop by and say hi?
No, but we had a law. You know, the thing about the Vatican is that you could go every day for a year and not be able to absorb it all. And our tour guide, an Australian woman named Caitlin Miller, by the time we got to the end of the Sistine Chapel, we were so overwhelmed with information that it was hard to appreciate it all. No, we didn't see the Pope, but I think in a morbid sense, the Pope had been sick just before we got there, and we're thinking, well, you know what we were thinking.
Yeah, sure. But
the Circus Maximus in Rome, where the gladiators fought and all that, Springsteen's going to play there later in the summer. And I think there's chairs for about 500 people, and there are going to be 150,000 people there drinking and standing. And it's not your scene, and it's not my scene, but it's Bruce. So
yeah, wow. I wonder if Liz will go to that one, or Sands. If Sands,
well,
will go
I don't
to that
know.
One.
You know, the thing about the Bruce tour, this 2023 Bruce tour, is that the video of each stop is phenomenal. I mean, you feel like you were there. I've only been to one of the shows. But I've watched the Tampa show, the Austin show, Tony, at the one in Houston, for about a month for Texas Monthly, I've been shadowing Greg Popovich. And, you know, I know you don't like the guy.
No.
I love the guy. I love what he stands for. But he can be, what's the word, cantankerous?
Yeah, okay.
At the Bruce show in Houston, I keep looking at the guy like three rows in front. They're bringing him armbands. They're bringing him shirts. And I'm thinking, I recognize that guy. And it was Popovich. And my wife, Marty, says, well, as he starts to leave, he's leaving during the last encore. She says, you should yell at him and tell him, hey, I'll be calling. I said, yeah, I think that would probably be the worst thing I could do.
Well, I'm glad you had such a wonderful time.
It was good. Thank you for asking.
Good. Bryce Harper comes back in an hour and a half. Like, right? I mean, he has Tommy John. Suddenly he's back. He's playing. He went 0-for-4. Obviously, I watched the clips of that. But what are your thoughts of how quickly he came back? And by the way, this is an operation. What if he's on the bases and has to slide? You know what I mean?
Right. What if they get into a roster crunch in a game and he has to play first base? And he may play first base. Old scouts will tell you this. The great ones never get hurt. Now, that's not exactly true, but it's more true than you think. The great players never get hurt, and also the great players are just woven together differently than everybody else. And that's never been more true of anyone than Bryce Harper. I've never been around a player that loved the moment, loved the spotlight. You know, I've had great players tell me, I said, boy, I guess that was fun being up there in the bottom of the ninth. They look and go, get out of here. I hate that. Bryce loves that, and that's been true from the moment he showed up on the mall in Washington and played in that softball game the day before his first game at Nats Park. And so, I mean, there's a story about Bryce in the Arizona Fall League. Bottom of the ninth inning, they're down by one, and he's 18 or 17 or something. He tells the guys in the dugout, if this guy gets on base, I'm going to turn the lights out on this bleep. And the guy got on, and he hit a ball that no one has ever found. And that's he has everything we've expected of him.
Yes.
He's surpassed. Now, is he a Hall of Famer? He's not a Hall of Famer. He has missed a lot of time. And one of the challenges the Nationals had, as you well know, was to tell him, you don't have to play 105 miles an hour every night. You don't have to run into every wall, steal every base, because it's going to take a toll on your body. And it has, but he is one of those people that the guys on the other team stop and watch him take batting practice. There is an electricity around Bryce Harper. So the idea that he could come back in 160 days and bat, that's Bryce Harper.
You mentioned Hall of Fame with Bryce Harper. This leads me to something. Jacob DeGrom, 1,300 innings, Richie. That's all he's pitched. Warren Spahn did that in 3 years.
Right.
1,300 innings.
No.
Is he a Hall of Famer? Can you make a case for him?
You can. You know, Chris Russo has a formula where he goes through each guy. He does he simplifies it. Each guy's season, Hall of Fame season, Hall of Fame season, not Hall of Fame season. That, and he looks for 10 of those Hall of Fame seasons before he declares a guy a Hall of Famer. So we're not there yet with any of those guys. You know, Harper. How many? You know. Koufax had a short career,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And there's never been anyone like him.
Yes.
And so I think we're in that category with him in that, you know, talking about Harper, he's won the MVP twice. Otherwise, he's never even been in the top 10. I think only gotten MVP votes one other time. When DeGrom goes out there, he's beyond great. All-star every year, MVP votes, Cy Young votes every year. But you're right, he's started 215 games. Well, what's his career? He's
got 84 wins.
He's won 84 games.
I mean, Sandy Koufax, a limited career, had 175 wins.
Yeah, and also Koufax pitched every inning when they gave him the ball. So, you're going to have to factor that. I would say in the case of both, now DeGrom is 34 years old.
Yes.
So we're pretty close to writing that story. In the case of Bryce Harper, he will turn 31 in October. And so the next 5 years will tell the tale on what he's going to be. I wouldn't underestimate him. But I think somebody in The Athletic wrote this, Andy McCullough, that it's sort of sad watching Jacob DeGrom pitch because he is at that point, he has been hurt often enough that every pitch he throws, while it may be as good as any pitch any guy in history has ever thrown, it could be his last. And the Rangers went into this with their eyes open. You know, they'll be criticized for giving him a 5-year, $185 million deal and all that. But if you were a fan of a team, would you rather have the ownership take a chance and spend some money and say, we're doing everything we can. As opposed to some teams there, you may know locally, that just say, see you later, Trey. See you later, Bryce.
That's right. That's, you're 100% right. But and for bringing them up, of course, I'll bring up Strasburg. Strasburg's never going to pitch another game. He may pitch an inning. He's not going to pitch a whole game. Strasburg has more wins. Strasburg has more innings than DeGrom, and they're the same age.
Yeah. Strasburg's a complicated guy. Like, in the case of Corbin and Strasburg, what was the championship worth to you in 2019? They will always have that.
They will always have that
they stepped up in the biggest moment and were at their best, including in Game 7. You just have to factor all of that in. Strasburg has what? He has 113 wins, right?
That's 30 more than DeGrom.
Right. And how many times has Steven Strasburg pitched 200 innings? Twice in his career. How many times has he been in the top five of Cy Young voting? One time.
Yeah.
One time in his career. So it's just not there. He's like Harper. He's one of those guys, you stop what you're doing and watch him. Remember those first games when he was pitching for the Nationals?
Yes.
You couldn't turn the TV off.
No, you had to watch
him. You'd never seen numbers like that on the radar gun, and you just thought, this guy's best ever. But it hasn't, health-wise, it hasn't held up.
God, I'll get you out of here on this. I watched the Pirates recently because they took two or three from the Nats. Who's their manager? He looks like he escaped from someplace. Who is that guy?
That's Derek. That's good. That's a good one. Yeah, that's Derek Shelton. He's from the Tampa Bay, the Joe Maddon managerial, the Andrew Friedman managerial tree.
Right.
And they're doing a great job. You know, like, Baltimore is winning the traditional way. You look at all those kids they have. Those are kids. In the case of the Pirates, Ben Sherrington, the GM there, has made acquisitions, affordable acquisitions, and brought Andrew McCutchen back, which has been a wildly popular. Guys like they have guys, young guys like Castro, Cabrian Hayes, that everybody knows. He's from around here, but it's a different way to do it. It's a mixture where Baltimore is just saying, we're all in with the kids. If you're 22, you're too old for us. Come on up. But it's fun to watch, and it's good for the game. But in a lot of these cases, as in Baltimore, you've lost for so many years that can you get the people to come back?
How do you feel? You covered the O's. You covered them for the Washington Post.
Yes.
How do you feel seeing how promising they are right now?
Well, Adley Rutschman's going to win an MVP. He's one of the best prospects ever, and so far he has fulfilled it. And he is one of those guys that when he walks in the room, he owns the room. But so what you're seeing is fabulous. Mountcastle, all those guys, those young pitcher, Grayson Rodriguez. But Tony, there's more coming. Matt Holliday's son Jackson looks like he's ready. A kid from the University of Arkansas, Heston Kerstad, he looks like he's ready. I mean, they are loaded. But again, remember, you go into this, you pay the price. You lose 100 games 3 years in a row, and in the case of Baltimore, there's a little the Buck Showalter era. Otherwise, they've lost for 20 years, and people find that they can live without it. Can you ever get them back? I believe the Nationals now have a higher attendance, and it's under 20,000, than the Orioles. Can you convince them to come back this summer in Maryland and make Camden Yards, a wild place again?
That would be great because it's a beautiful ballpark. That would be a really good thing. Welcome home. Thanks for being on.
Yeah, thanks, Tony.
Richie Justice, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We have email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I love this. This is the actual Missouri marching band.
It's just the best.
Incredible that they would do this. This is a university marching band.
Yes.
It's a Big 12 school.
Graduation's coming up.
Are they SEC? Are they an SEC school?
I
think they were
big, big time school.
Yeah, big time school.
Big time journalism program.
Yes.
They had to learn that. And they played it. It's simply fantastic.
It always reminds me of a baloney jingle.
Fantastic.
My baloney has a first name.
Bethesda Bagel.
Oh, Bethesda Bagels.
Hot bagels
got
today.
The hot bagels today. Very excited about that. We love Bethesda Bagels. You will as well.
Hot just means they were cooked today.
They're cooked, fresh this morning. Yeah.
Very. They're still smiling.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
You can't wait to divide these bagels.
Yeah.
Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the DC area nearest you. Then pop on in and you will be thrilled.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, Levon wears his war wounds like a crown. He calls his child Jesus because he likes the name. And he sends him to the finest school in town. Levon likes his money. He makes a lot, they say. Spends his days counting in a garage by the motorway. That's how Elton John says it, in a garage by the motorway. Thanks to our guests, Chuck Culpepper, Richard Justice. Thanks to our sponsors, Game Time, Books, and Policy Genius. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple, please leave us a review.
Doesn't feel like it, but it is spring here. We have a new Johnny O code for you.
What is it? Rain?
TK5. FIVE. You want to guess why?
No, I don't know.
Well, I could go for the old promo code of Tony K. We got TK when you go five wide. May, your fifth month.
Or
we're celebrating the five RBI from your favorite national,
Dominic
Smith, through the month of April. Oh,
he's TK5. The worst player in the major leagues. He's the worst. He can't hit at all.
He's starting to hit the last two games.
He gets one hit a game. It just is meaningless.
Yeah, inconsequential.
He got a home run the other day. They were down 16-0. Okay, he got a one-run home run. Okay. From Dina in Damascus, she writes, I don't know how many emails I've sent. I don't know what percentage of them were read, but I do know this. Up until this email, the number of times I've mentioned my alma mater is zero. Eat it, Elliot. Dina in Damascus, graduate of Cornell University and Johns Hopkins University, and episode number 53. This is aimed at Olshansky. Boom. From Steve Hansen in Maumee, M-A-U-M-E-E, Maumee, Ohio. Your reflection on Jason Taper's golf ball email had Dr. Seuss written all over it. Could it have been in a tree or in a bush no one would see? Or in the lake, for goodness sake, through tributaries by a snake, or buried in a trap you see, cause of OTGBIP. Regardless, it's a mystery that Jason Tapor posed to me. That's really good. Really good. From Tyler Etchenkamp, formerly of Wayne, Nebraska, now Lincoln, Nebraska. It's about chickens. Wayne, Nebraska hosts the annual Wayne Chicken Show every summer. Dating back to 1981, festivities include the world's largest chicken dance, Henoween, a hot wing eating contest, and the national cluck-off, which is exactly what it sounds like, a chicken imitation contest. Two winners have been guests on The Tonight Show. Yes, that Tonight Show. Once for Norfolk, Nebraska's own Johnny Carson, once for Jay Leno. So why do we do this? No reason. Seriously, we aren't a producer of chickens or eggs or anything. We just do it. Every year it's the bleeping chickens. Holy God almighty. From Alex Lau. I've been in somewhat of a slump with your show lately in terms of emails. Haven't been able to figure out why. I asked myself, am I no longer funny? When my ego wouldn't allow me to believe that I searched for other answers. Then listening to this last week of shows, it finally hit me. All you've been doing recently is talking about life on a farm, cows and milk and chickens. As someone from Long Island who has only otherwise lived in Washington, D.C., Hoboken, New Jersey, and New York City, how am I supposed to relate to any of this, as interesting as it may be? Get back to talking about the neuroses of city folks, so I have some material to work with here.
City chicken.
From John Hutchinson in Duncan in British Columbia, a.k.a. the land of the great majestic soda bear. On Thursday's show, while reading an email describing the end-of-life cycle for egg-laying chickens, Nigel opined that it's not a great retirement plan. You replied, it ends badly. It does for everyone. Speak for yourself, pal. I don't know about you, but I have no plans to become pet food or soup. At least no plans known to me. The woman to whom I'm related by marriage may dispute this. From Carla Corrado. So disappointed that you talked about a small town in Ohio was Versailles, not Galena. Mistakes were made.
Yes.
Love
yes.
Carla Corrado.
She's great.
From Mark Graff at Hill Air Force Base in Utah. I noted an Azores reference on Wednesday when you wondered about where some of the 36 billion chickens exist on Earth.
Yes.
While I can't comment on chickens in the Azores, here's another little-known fact about animals living among us. The Azores, my first overseas duty station with the Air Force, are not just nine beautiful volcanic islands in the North Atlantic, but are known for having a more than 2-to-1 cow to human ratio. The island boasts hundreds of thousands of cows to only tens of thousands of people. One species is even considered protected because they're part of Portuguese heritage in the islands. So a 2-to-1 bovine to human ratio. That's utterly amazing. I'll be here all week, folks, with the bad cow puns. I think, you know, I think that's really sort of nice, right? I
mean, it's nice. Okay, for the cows, one, sure.
A couple more. Chris Bansells in Forest Hills, Maryland. So let me get this straight. Someone corrects you once on the pronunciation of Versailles, Ohio, and it's no problem, but Lake Orion or Orion is still a mystery to you? Come
yes,
on, man.
Yes, it is.
From Ryan Corlin, Charleston, West Virginia. In case anybody is wondering, Versailles, Ohio is roughly 100 miles and 2 hours from Galena, Ohio. This is the stupidest email I've ever written.
Well, that's information for Kona.
From Steve Arnold, a relocated Aussie. Been in the States for 20-plus years, and I'm semi-retired in Prescott, Arizona. Big fan of the show, and the reason I'm in the USA, listen to your podcast on long car rides with me. About 15 years ago, while living in Charlottesville, Virginia, we were out at dinner. Got up from our booth, saw a green Kohl's shopping bag, C-O-L-E-S, one of the two major grocery chains down under, on the floor next to the neighboring booth. I said, been to Australia? To a young couple with two kids? No, we're Aussies down from the embassy in D.C. Oh, where is home, I asked. Adelaide, South Australia, they said. I said, same. What suburb? Wattle Park. I went to Norwood High, which was next to Wattle Park. Some of my friends lived in Wattle Park. What street, they asked. Well, that was over 30 years ago. I remember a small, funnily named street, Loma Linda Drive. We live on Loma Linda Drive. Who was your friend? Mick Davey. He was a genius and went to a complete doctorate in mathematics in Cambridge in 1974. Haven't seen him since 1977. We live next door to his dad, Keith Davey.
Of course.
We exchanged emails, and I finally caught up with Mick and had lunch with him in London a few years ago. Small world.
That's amazing.
All of these things are amazing. From Luke Reeder. My name is Lucas from Bentonville, Arkansas. Emailed once about bike helmet safety. And while in a Dallas coffee shop, we sat beside eight men in Rivian jackets. That's that car that we talked about, the Rivian. As it was the only seat open, the person related to me by marriage and I had to endure what felt like hours of them talking about their charging habits and how much their lives have been changed since making the switch. They made Subaru drivers seem palatable.
I need that jacket.
From Mark Becker in Silver Spring, Maryland. I woke up this morning, I looked at my alarm clock. The number said 5:11, and all I could think of was not very good. I've been listening to your show for far too long. From Jim Coleman. Not that Jim Coleman, no. Thanks for reading my email. Made my day. One thing, the Wayne, Pennsylvania, where I live, is one town west of Villanova, outside Philadelphia, not Wayne County. Not important, but I thought I would let you know. From Peter Jennings. Not that Peter Jennings. Always enjoy your dialogue with Barry Zwerluga. But you guys came to the conclusion that Washington, D.C. is currently the worst city with four professional teams. Sorry, but as a native Michigander, it hurts me to say it's not even close. Detroit is hands-down winner for being losers. All four franchises are just awful, with no hope in sight. And please don't say the Lions have turned the corner. They are a jinxed franchise. Okay, none of them made the playoffs.
No.
But the Lions beat the Packers on the last Sunday night game of the season, knocking the Packers out. And it looked like the Lions had turned the corner.
Yeah.
Whereas nothing has turned the corner in Washington. They're still headed down in Washington.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that. From Ryan Coral. Didn't we just read from Ryan Coral? Says, it rained in Charleston, West Virginia today. Please tell Pablo. And he writes, chance number two for Tony to get the joke. I get the joke. Pablo's my son. I get the joke. We used to tell Michael it rained. You know, I get it.
Still have the voicemail.
I get it.
Block by block updates.
It's the best.
And one more. From Bill Keister in Kensington, Maryland. Really, Mr. Tony, when prompted by your son to, quote, name one trip you enjoyed when we were kids, which for most humans would presume that you went with your kids and not just a trip you took during the time when your kids were in fact kids. But you fumble for a moment to come up with a baseball game, which is both not a trip, but is also well established you would spend these baseball trips in press boxes, leaving your children to fend for themselves. I imagine being watched by an usher named Eddie, whom you met that afternoon. But after that, you immediately thought of a lovely work trip to Portugal. You didn't specify if your kids were there, but if they were there, their presence certainly had no impact on the pleasant memories of eating olives. This felt like the time Sarah Palin was asked where she got her information from, and she fumbled for minutes to come up with the name of a single source. All she had to do was name a newspaper. Perhaps if there had been a pony rod on one of the family trips, it would have popped to the top of your memories. Enjoy Ingleside. if you have on your butt tonight, everyone, do wear white. That's the nastiest email.
I'm saving that.
And the crowd engaged in a hearty La Cheeserie to the folks from Seattle.
Yeah.